Welcome back to the Unlearning of Child Welfare podcast. I'm Jaquaya Wilson, and in this episode, I am joined by Carrie Washington, a fellow youth advocate and policy advisor from the American Academy of Pediatrics, as well as a panel of advocates including Sharonda Sullivanoff, Public Policy Director at the Children's Home Society of Washington, Jessica Crisp, a licensed foster parent, Matt Anderson, Director at the Institute for Family, and Jerry Milner, Associate Commissioner at the Children's Bureau. This is the first part of the conversation on what it means to make a more just and equitable experience for youth and families within the child welfare system. Let's dive in.
I'm here today with my wonderful co-host, fellow youth advocate and policy advisor, Ms. Carrie Richmond. So honored to be with her from American Academy of Pediatrics. Ms. Carrie, did you want to say hi to everyone really quick?
Hello, everyone. Great to be here.
Yay. Thank you so much. It's a wonderful thing to have you here with me. So Carrie, I'd love to hear your thoughts, honestly, on the current systems, climate, and how you're feeling today. I'm so glad you could be here with me to co-host.
Thanks, Jaquaya. It's so good to co-host with you. And as Jaquaya mentioned, I'm also an advocate in the space with the American Academy of Pediatrics as the manager of child welfare policy, and also lead a startup organization called Foster Strong, whose mission is to rewrite the narrative in foster care using our own experience. All of us in our organization were alumni of foster care and really hoping to shed a light on the triumph that comes after trauma. And so as someone who has also experienced foster care, it's really exciting to be here with Jet today. And one of the things that we have been talking about a lot leading up to this event is that there's a shift in the power dynamics that are happening, and that it's really refreshing to be asked to co-host and lead the discussion here instead of being just another seat on the panel asked to speak about our trauma. And for me, that feels like a really significant step forward for leveling out what equity looks like within our system. So Jaquaya, would love to hear your thoughts on that front too.
Honestly, I just feel like I cannot tell you how many times we have been invited to the conversation and just given the mic and asked to share our experiences and not really given the power to change and be a part of that conversation in that way. So I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I'm super excited that we have this platform and this ability as former alumni of the system to share and be in this space together.
Yeah. And as we dive into this conversation about what does it look like to create just an equitable system, this idea that has come up a lot leading up to this event is that oftentimes you hear people who are advocating saying, we need former foster youth to have a seat at the table. We need birth parents to have a seat at the table. We need foster parents to have a seat at the table. But truly, the table would not exist if it weren't for our kids and our youth. And so when we're thinking about how do we really prioritize their well-being, well, it so closely hinges on their attachment to the adults around them, their family, who they see as somebody who is caring and consistent and reliable. And so when we're thinking about how we prioritize that well-being, we really have to be having more seats at the table. We have to build a longer table that encompasses the entire village that it takes to raise a child.
Yes. So I'd really like to hear from the panelists, you know, what would a more just and equitable experience look like for kids and families? Ms. Sharonda, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, what do we need to unlearn to get there?
Thank you so much, Jaquaya, and thank you for the opportunity to be on this platform with others. I want to just kind of go back and first of all, just say, if we can't acknowledge what is happening in child welfare, we can't change it. And we have a way of saying things so that it's palpable. But I really want to be bold and brave in this space and say that the system in its current framework is racist. And it is a hard thing to say out loud. I think people get incredibly uncomfortable hearing such a term and extremely want to defend it, which in itself denotes that there is something wrong. And I think that we have to be bold and brave and say there's something incredibly wrong with the way that child welfare operates. And it targets families in a way that leaves them absolutely devastated from the consequences of being involved. And so one of the things when I'm looking at an equitable experience is acknowledging that there's inequities that are happening. As a kinship caregiver, I had a profound experience recently, and I didn't even know what was happening at the time, but I've had some time to process and kind of get to the other side. And so living in America and recognizing that there are outcomes that are predominantly assigned to certain demographics. And I was thinking about my son who's currently experiencing some adversity. I'm caring for his child. And I was on this panel and this woman started to talk about a kinship experience. And I had to pull myself off of camera because I was so consumed with emotions. It was the first time someone had started to articulate what it's like to be a kinship in this system. While I watched my son navigate other systems that, you know, in some respects, data says he was destined to get there, I want to just talk about what it feels like to be a kinship and the lack of support and understanding of what actually happens. We have a lot of messaging, and the messaging is we want to get kids to kin, but the resources and the funding do not say that. It says, here's your child, you guys figure it out. And in the punitive nature of child welfare, that sometimes I feel penalized. And I feel penalized in a way that is difficult to articulate because there's a place that says you're deserving of what's happening to you in this moment, like you've played a part in it. And while I certainly have played a part in it, I haven't played all the parts in it. And as I get more educated and I get more understanding of what the complexities and the drivers that actually get people to some type of future that they didn't necessarily want for themselves, I'm confronted with the guilt, the shame, the isolation, the completely feeling alone, and then wanting and needing to step up. So when I'm talking about those equitable experiences for families, what I can tell you is that kinship caregivers really need support. Right? They take on a large percentage of children. And here in Washington State, 43% of families are with kinship. And currently, you know, lower percentages receiving the types of subsidies that foster care parents get. So one of the things I'd like to see is equity in the way that we support families, that if they find themselves in child welfare, how are we supporting those members so that they can keep their family members close, but also recognize they're having an experience. I never wanted a grandson in child welfare. I never wanted myself in child welfare. And the idea that I would be deserving or that I, you know, wanted any of this really speaks to the way that we see and treat families of color. My heart is as connected to my child as your heart is connected to your child. And I think the more that we get a commonality and get some compassion and understanding for what is happening for families, the more that we will actually be able to do something that actually creates an equitable and a experience that says, you matter. You know, we understand families are complex. We understand that your heart would not want this for your child. I wouldn't want this for my child. And in an effort of that commonality and camaraderie, we will honor your experience by giving you exactly what we would give someone else and help you to process and walk through this with some grace and dignity instead of some shame and blame and guilt. And I don't think that a lot of times we recognize that kinship caregivers carry their own burdens in this, and that as members of society, we should be coming around folks and not placing them on an island and making them feel like they've done something that's lacking, because all we are is just human beings having a human experience, which means there's a variety and a difference of the way we show up and what we experience. At the end of the day, our core beliefs and our emotions and feelings are universal. And I think the more that we can start to approach this work from understanding, that is the way to start to create an equitable experience for families.
Thank you so much for that, Shonda. I really agree strongly. We need to recognize the experience that our families and our kinship providers are facing, and we need to serve them with compassion and understanding of their situations and really meet them where we are so that we can better serve. Can we hear some more thoughts on that from our other panelists?
Yeah, I'm excited to jump in, and I appreciate everything that has been shared and just feel so strongly the level of empathy needs to be there in general to help our entire system. And I know that I'm sharing from a slightly different perspective as a foster parent coming into this instead of the kinship care. But part of what I noticed during our year and 5 months of having a child in our care that was later reunified, part of what I saw was just the importance of my own unlearning process that I needed to do in all of this. So I think all of us have to look at our roles within this entire process and say, let's do a quick self-assessment. What am I honestly bringing to the table here? And what do I truly have the child and the family's best interests at heart? And I think when I went into this process as a foster parent, my desire was honestly to grow my family, was to prove to others that I would have the ability to provide for a child who is in care, who comes into our home. And so my desire wasn't truly focused on reunification. It seemed even locally that the climate was reunification is the goal, but we don't know if that's going to happen. That's kind of how things were stated. But really what we've got to do with all of these families experiencing this hardship is to try to see things from their perspective, let the walls come down and join with them as a support system. I think we truly have to embrace shared parenting. And I think some of us can throw around that phrase at times because it's just something that we say within these systems, a shared parenting, like it's this concept, but really living that out made the biggest difference for the family and especially for the child in care and for their overall trajectory for what their future looks like. We had an incredible opportunity to build a relationship with the child in care London and with her family. And over time, we built trust. But honestly, it was hard in the beginning. We were all defensive. We were all unsure of how this was supposed to work. And we felt afraid to communicate. What we found was that it was best for our little one, the more that we as foster parents could engage and support her parent, and not just her parents, but her grandparents, her aunts, her uncles. We all became this one unit over time. And the way that we were successful was by truly humbling ourselves and making ourselves vulnerable. And I feel like that is so hard to do in this climate. But anything we can do to show a little bit of vulnerability, to show we truly are human, and we can really impact others and make a difference in someone else's life versus what my agenda is. So I feel like when we can shift towards that reunification, we share the same goal, then it's not that we're two separate families, the foster family and the child's family, loving the child or working together for the child. It's that we're really one unit that can work in such a cohesive way that long-term will impact everyone that's involved.
Thank you for those thoughts. I know that must have been a hard and a very unlearning process for you and your family to come into this thinking things are one way and then to have to unlearn that process for what's best for the child. And that's the kind of village that we're talking about when we say that we need a community and a longer table for our youth and in care and for our families who may experience this. And you touched on something, even talking about reunification is the plan, but that may not happen. And it just really speaks to, you know, that almost unsaid that this family is deserving of this idea. And we need to really work to unlearn that and to come together as a community. So I'm really interested to hear also what our fellow panelist, Mr. Milner, has to say about this topic. He's been a leader in this conversation as well.
Let me just say, you know, the whole idea of creating a more just and equitable experience, it's what our mission has been in the Children's Bureau for almost 4 years now. We want to create the kind of a system out there where we have supportive community-based environments where families can get essential needs met. Sometimes these are basic concrete needs rather than clinical interventions before a call to the child welfare hotline is even necessary, and where families don't perceive the threat of losing their kids if they reveal their vulnerabilities and actually ask for help. I think a more just and equitable experience would include enforcement of so many of protections that are already on the books out there, like reasonable efforts to prevent removals and seeking out and using the voices of the families and the youth that our system is supposed to benefit. And as Jessica has already pointed out, a more just and equitable system would look like having our foster care system serving as a support to entire families, not just a substitute for families. And like Sharonda has mentioned, supporting kinship families with the same level of supports as unrelated caretakers out there. I love the concept of what do we have to unlearn, because almost every conversation that I have with somebody about transforming our child welfare system leads me back to the fact that often we aren't even talking, beginning the conversation from the same perspectives there, because we haven't begun to think more broadly than what we know about our current system. One of the things that I think we absolutely have to unlearn as the child welfare agency is that we always know best. Quite honestly, we don't always know best. Families are the experts on their needs and their circumstances. Youth are the experts on what their experiences have been and their needs. And we have to get to the place where we exercise the humility of understanding that we've not walked in someone else's shoes or experienced their trauma or their day-to-day struggles. And that, in fact, we can learn from the people that we serve. Another thing that we have to unlearn is that it always has to be complicated. You know, we create more funding opportunities and more programs out there, but we also create them with more and more restrictions on how many people can be served, how deep in crisis you must be before you can benefit, the amount, the dosage of those services. It doesn't have to be so complicated. It can be as simple as creating those conditions out there where families can receive kindness from people in their own communities, people who know them, people who care about them, the kind of kindness that can help a family to avoid the crisis that often leads them to the child welfare door. I think from a leadership position in the federal government, we have to unlearn that we cannot trust communities with flexible funding and with flexibility in our rules and our regulations. We have to learn that communities, in fact, know their families better than we can know them in Washington, D.C. or in our state capitals or wherever. And we have to learn to trust them to be able to meet those needs. I think we have to unlearn, quite honestly, that prevention is somebody else's business, a nice thing to do, and that it's not really the business of the child welfare system. Prevention has to be the business of all of us. If we want to change the experiences of families, of children, and of youth, but we have to learn that it has to be our business. We also have to unlearn that physical safety alone is simply not good enough. Every one of us needs well-being, and we can be safe without achieving well-being. And if we want to break some of those very difficult historical intergenerational patterns of trauma, disruption that our families experience over and over again, we have to begin as a system to get serious about addressing the well-being of both the parents and the children. I think we have to unlearn, building on Jessica's remarks, that foster families are merely there to serve the agency's wishes and to follow the rules that we've created, and learn to treat our foster families and our kinship caregivers with respect and as a resource for entire families needing support and help. And the last thing I want to say that I think we have to unlearn is that we have to unlearn that parents are the enemy. Even if they have made some difficult decisions, some bad decisions, or even if they've taken some bad turns in life, and we have to learn that families, parents are our best hope for ensuring the well-being, not only of their families, but of their children. And I think we have to look no further, if we want to bring this into focus right now, than the very widely publicized, widespread fears that are out there right now in the media, that the pandemic is leading countless children to be abused by their bad parents while they're at home and we don't have other people, mandated reporters, looking over them. That's a real reflection of our values, and it's quite revealing in how we view vulnerable parents in our society, and we have to begin to unlearn.
Wow, those are some really inspiring thoughts and some really concrete ways that we can unlearn what it is that we practice in today's current child welfare state. Matt, would you like to add any additional comments to what Mr. Milner and sure. the other panelists have shared?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd love to. And thank you all. I mean, I'm just soaking it all in here, both what you all have to say. I think, Sharonda, maybe you said brave spaces and courageous spaces. And I think we have to have spaces like this right now. So I hope we're all finding ways to create spaces like this in our own communities, in our own states, in our own organizations, to have difficult conversations about kind of the state of affairs and what do we really want for kids and families? What do we really want for communities? And I think we all need to do that. And, you know, I'm inspired by this conversation. And, you know, most of you on this webinar don't know me at all, and you're just getting introduced to me as the director of the Institute for Family. And I am, but I also serve in a program leadership role at the Children's Home Society, where the Institute is housed. And so I'm in kind of an interesting seat in this conversation, because for the last 5 years, I've been leading our foster care program. And I've learned and unlearned quite a bit over that period of time. And this is a really important conversation for me, just personally, as somebody that's responsible for a program that's serving kids in foster care and their families. And so we serve about 1,200 kids a year across our program. And I think, you know, what I've come to realize that for me and for our program, our organization, what we need to unlearn is actually what our job is. We really need to think seriously about what our job is as foster care, child welfare providers. What are we trying to do? What questions are we asking ourselves? Are we asking ourselves, how do we get better as an organization and as a program? We are, but I think we should be asking ourselves, why do we exist as an organization, as a program? When it comes to families and what families need from us, we need to ask ourselves why we exist. And so in our program team, when we get together and talk, you know, oftentimes, you know, we talk about, we are not in the service of foster care. We don't exist for the purpose of foster care. And foster care is a thing that's happening right now, and it's a necessary role that many of us are playing. But our job needs to be to get kids out of foster care as quickly and safely as possible. And right now, I think, you know, our funding system is set up right now to pay for foster care. So we have to really be working against the tide, right? I mean, we need to be preventing foster care in the first place. But when we think about the foster care system as it is today, we need to be incredibly focused on what we've just been hearing about, kinship and reunification. You know, as kids come into the system for the purpose of child protection and keeping kids safe, then we need to be focused on placing with families and focused on reunification. And so for me, that's an unlearning of what my job actually is and what we're actually, you know, supposed to be doing in this work. And so I'll share that thought as what I'm trying to unlearn.
I know that must be great to do an organization that supports and really centers around family well-being and support. So Carrie, did you have anything that you'd like to add or any comments from just hearing our wonderful panelists share some from their perspectives with some of the things that they need to unlearn to make this a more just and equitable system for all?
Yeah, I mean, phew, so much good stuff in there. And some of the themes that really stood out to me and just hearing those powerful answers was embracing vulnerability, like humility, and how important it is to humble ourselves and do the work of unlearning, which isn't always easy. And then that idea that Sharonda talked about in terms of shame and how we have to stop shaming. And I think as we have this conversation and, you know, with 2020 being such a perfect year for reflecting on the ways that we may have contributed to a harmful system, that it is important for us to be accountable to that, but that it is not a moment of shaming, but it's a moment of opportunity. That just like Maya Angelou says, that when you know better, you do better. And so I hope that as we're all sitting here today thinking about what we have to unlearn, that we are seeing this as a path to stepping forward into being better, into really standing as champions for all children and families and really prioritizing family well-being.
Wow, what an episode. Thanks again to Sharonda, Jessica, Carrie, Matt, and Jerry for being a part of this important conversation on family well-being. There is more to come in the final conversation, so stay tuned.